It's welcome to a very spooky episode of the Gecko Games Cast.
Yes. If you're wondering what's so spooky about this one, me too.
It's the date.
I'm wondering too. Yeah, maybe it's just October. So get your pumpkin spice lattes out, because Rich and I are going to be talking about...
games.
I was actually just waiting for you to be like, games now. There's a few games that actually came out recently, more popular, the Squadron game. I have not... Baldur's Gate does not come out this week, did it?
It's out on Tuesday.
Next week, right?
I have it.
Oh, Tuesday.
I cannot talk about it.
Okay. So, cannot talk about it, though. That's fine.
Save that.
That's
for
the spooky
next
part.
Week.
That's the true spooky part.
Also,
you can't hear
tell
about
you
it
the
until
truth,
next week.
Like, I have Tuesday off. Monday night is when I'm going to be able to put the most time into that because of when I got it.
Pretty cool.
So I don't really have much to share outside of what we already knew, because we've already talked about the start post PAX because we both saw that.
Yeah. So, plus, I'm just expecting it's going to be great anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Fucking is.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure it is.
The most difficult part was me deciding what race I wanted to start as.
Yeah, and as a character customizer too. With Divinity, that was also my biggest problem at the time, because I need to sit there for a good hour and just do it, which I don't typically do. Like, I'm not really too much of the type of person to just sit on like a Fallout character creator and just sit there for a couple of hours and be like,
to me,
like,
this is like playing D&D, and I do take the time with shit like that.
Yeah, especially the system that's working on. Yeah, for sure. Because I think it kind of operates using the same system. I think Icewind Dale and all those use 3rd edition. Yeah, this one uses 5e, so it's just an upgrade from the older versions.
Yeah.
So I can imagine that it definitely takes a little bit more degree of effort. Like, even Wasteland 3, I think I was done with character creation on that in, like, half hour. I really don't take too long to peruse
through
things.
I went with the prefabs on Wasteland 3.
Yeah, and sometimes they just give you good ones.
There are good...
Let's say on, like, Fallout 2, I just take a good half hour and just go through
there
it.
There are good prefabs in Baldur's Gate 3 also, I can say that much at least. Like, one of the stronger ones, and I picked this... I didn't use this character, I made my own, but I picked him up for my party pretty early on, is a vampire wood elf.
Wow. Very, very chic.
Like, the most concerning thing for him when the story starts, and I can share this because it was in that initial demo, I think they played as him in that, after he's been implanted by the Mind Flayers, like, the most alarming thing to him is he can walk in sunlight.
Wow.
So, like, he's like...
And it's probably just a brand new world.
He's like, well, this probably isn't good long term.
He probably just sees everything and it's just normal. He goes,
Yeah, that's... Well, I'll never forget being in that room for that demo. I think I told this story before. When the party first made camp in that initial demo, they were playing as that character. And it gave you them the option to roll to try and feed on one of the party members while they slept. And the entire crowd just started cheering, do it, do it. And then he rolled
Everybody
a nat 20.
Everybody loves chaotic energy. A nat 20
so
on the roll.
Like, nobody had any idea. They're like, I woke up with this weird tinge in my neck.
I love that they implemented the D&D system in those games, mainly just because I think of Divinity, and Divinity has a great system, too, with the initiative system.
Divinity's amazing, but it's...
Oh, for sure. It just... Baldur's Gate also just scratches the itch to get a little bit more technical.
Mm-hmm.
Which, actually, I think even in 5e, it's not going to be that technical. 5e is pretty streamlined, but when it came to, say, Baldur's Gate 2 or Icewind Dale, that was... It reminded me of playing even Fallout 2. It was just a little bit more technical, because 3rd edition was a little bit more in-depth than 5.
I'm more excited to see what the Baldur's Gate multiplayer stuff can do, mm-hmm. because that'll be kind of long-term. It is launching in early access. Like, my understanding is you can play this like you're playing D&D to the point of you, me, two other people could be playing, and you and I can fuck off to do one. Like, if we have three objectives, we could be like, all right, you two go handle this on that side of the world, and we're going to head to this dungeon and take care of this.
That'd be pretty cool. And knowing Larian, it probably is going to be like that, because they actually handled multiplayer with Divinity quite well, where I don't think you needed to be in the same places at the same time. I think you could truly just go do whatever you wanted in the instances that you loaded.
They toted with Baldur's Gate 3, you 100% can just be in the same world, changing the world, and fuck off, and all four of you go do whatever the fuck it is you please.
I love the way they handled combat, where you could just get into a total scuff with people, and, you wouldn't even be engaged. Like, the other party wouldn't even need to engage with it until they actually entered your little section or your area.
Yeah.
where the fight was happening, and then you get considered into the system. But it's, overall, you can literally just hang back and just say, nah, I'm not doing this.
But now that you're here, now you're rolling for initiative.
Yeah, exactly. And they just put you on the board. So, pretty curious. I'm going to try that out this week, next week, too.
My little halfling rogue is stealthing around, doing his thing.
Always with the halfling rogues.
They're
everybody loves a good halfling rogue.
It's funny. It's like he's got big feet and a dagger. Let's see what this boy can do.
Yeah, but I'm pretty much prepping for it on Tuesday. It's going to be a good time.
I'm off Tuesday. I will probably be up very late Monday.
Grab's great, too.
Playing that.
Yeah, that'll be a good one. Honestly, in terms of things that I've even played...
I played a lot.
I just played Among Us, and I've been playing a lot of Monster Hunter. That's what I've been playing.
I didn't put Among Us because... I didn't put it because I figured you would. We both played a bunch of that. We played a good deal of it together as well.
Yeah, that game's fun.
It is.
It's a good flavor of the month game.
It really makes you realize you can't trust your friends.
Yeah, and it's pretty crazy how this game had been out for almost 2 years prior. Nobody heard about it. Or rather, I should say, nobody gave it the attention that it's getting now.
No, not it suddenly...
And then, of course, the same way that I would imagine Fall Guys got its boost, it got popular amongst the streaming crowd, and now everybody is playing
it. Yeah, and I think good on the devs for their decision to... They were in the middle of making a sequel, which they decided to cancel and work on rolling a lot of those features into the base game, which... is harder than making a new game. Let me stress that. So, like, that's a tough decision to make. But at the same time, I totally get the attitude of, like, hey, listen, suddenly this thing is the hottest shit ever. We don't want to split our player base.
Yeah, and if anybody has not heard about this yet, it's literally just, if you've played Garry's Mod, Trouble in Terrorist Town, where it's just social deduction. It's just Mafia.
Yeah, it's a social deduction
game. With a spaceship-y element to
it's
it.
It's $5... on a computer. It's free with ads on your phone.
Yeah, I've just been playing it on my phone.
Were you playing on your phone last night?
I've been playing on my phone the whole time. Yeah. I had no problem with it.
Apparently you picked the wrong time to get in, because as we were playing earlier yesterday, or it might have been the day before, Vinny was complaining about, like, it giving him problems on his phone, and then Tom bought it for him on Steam so he would just shut up.
Wow. I really did come on the wrong time. Maybe Tom could have bought me
one. $5 ticket.
Yeah, maybe I could have gotten the $5. No, honestly, it's not even that I don't even mind not giving... I mean, the devs are getting my money from the advertising anyways. But it's just I haven't had a problem with it, genuinely.
My phone screen
and
is
and the controls on it, it's just touchscreen. It's just touchscreen controls, you know? The only gripe that I'll ever give it is that there's one task that you can do where you have to drag your finger to make, like, a little path through this maze when you're rewiring things, and if you take your finger off, it'll, like, reset the whole thing. That's the only gripe I have, but other than that, it's all fine. I'll end up giving them $5 probably just to support it, but I just think it's pretty funny how, like, once again, you're going to see evidence of such a strong trajectory of a game. Fall Guys actually didn't even have the opportunity to do this because it wasn't released for over a year where they're trying to revamp it. But Among Us was. I've actually heard of Among Us in the past, too, and I never knew what it was. I just knew from Steam, because I think Steam had some, like, little profile picture or something for it that people had, where it was just these little bean people.
Knowing of it and thinking, like, what a weird little art style, but then it became, all of a sudden, it was the hottest thing in, like, I don't know who first started streaming it, but, I mean, we got up to
everybody's asking about Among Us now. Everybody wants to play. They're like, oh, you want to play Among Us? Among Us? Among Us? It's ridiculous.
We got up to a full 10-player game last night, and that was pretty, that was a lot of fun.
I hate playing this game. I hate playing this game.
I hate that I
because...
love it. Like, there's a million other things I should be doing, and then when somebody's like, come on, Among Us, I'm like, fine.
And it's quick, too, but then I blink, and I literally have been sitting in a chair for 3 hours just yelling at people. And it's a fun game. This almost reminds me of when Secret Hitler was coming out at the time.
It's the same energy.
That was really... I still prefer that sometimes because you're in person, even though I do like...
Well,
but I do have to say...
that experience in a normal world where we all can regularly get together and sit around a table at somebody's house and play Secret Hitler.
Yeah, honestly, Among Us... is the best way that I can say is that it's almost like training wheels for people to play social deduction games in person, because I know a lot of people who don't like playing those types of games because they say or think that they're terrible liars, like our friend Mike, because he is.
Yeah, he's not.
And they don't like playing those kinds of games in person, but this game actually is a very nice balance because you don't need to show your face to anybody. You just gotta speak through a mic and just try to convince people that you're a good person and that you're not a killer.
That's almost crazier in a sense because, like, I find myself measuring the inflections in people's voices more often. Like, we were playing last night. I was like, Raul, you gotta be more sure of yourself, man. Like, even when you're telling me the truth, I feel like you're hiding something.
Well, that's why. But then, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's almost like you're training yourself to even just listen to the voice. And then when you go to play games like this in person, then you focus on, say, even body language. You're like, I don't know, like, people are just acting a little strange or they seem off. And it just takes it to another level. But when you reach that harmony with, say, like a group of friends and you truly just don't care.
It's funnier.
At that point, whether or not you're convicting somebody of doing something wrong or killing others, it is so much fun. That's really where the games or just social deduction games like these really shine. And I always want more people to take advantage of them because it's a blast. It's
also my favorite turnaround.
You just got to find the right audience for it. Like, I don't even feel comfortable playing this with a group of strangers because I don't know them. I don't have history with anybody. But if I were, like, just throwing you under the bus, I don't care.
It's funny.
Like, it's just fun to me.
My favorite, like, turnaround is just pure. Like, when we go in and you occasionally have those games where somebody starts pointing at you initially. Like, when we were playing last night, our friend Eddie was like, you know, everybody was accounted for over here, but I haven't seen where Meister was. And I just, like, get quiet and go, oh, my fucking God, it's you.
Yeah, always. Always, always. Or even better, when somebody, the person who is the imposter kills somebody, and you walk in the room right when it happens, and then they report the body and then say it's you. It's like, there's just a moment of fear, just quick panic, because then you're realizing, oh my God, I have to just out talk. Yeah. I have to out convince the other party at this point. And you can't let whoever get to the crowd first, because then it's like the fucking Crucible, where you have to convince everybody you're not a witch when everyone's already throwing stones at you and demanding that you be put on fire for being a witch.
And then
there's terrible.
There's no worse feeling than, like, really sticking your neck out for somebody, and then, like, two emergency meetings later, you realize it was them all along.
Yeah, and you know what? For others who really just never have heard this game, it boils down to you can have a group up to 10 people, and then just like any social deduction game, out of those 10 people, you could have one or two people who are the traitors or imposters in this case, and these imposters' roles throughout the game can just kill other people, and you try to do it while you're wandering around this spaceship or just other
maps.
You're
trying to essentially prepare your spaceship or whatever to depart where you are. And the imposters are trying to kill the rest of the crew, and they can sabotage parts of the ship to make your job a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, and that's literally in a nutshell. And throughout the game, you can report on bodies that you found, or you can call meetings. And it's just, the whole thing with this is that nobody is supposed to be talking unless you are in a discussion panel. And
also, the dead players have a separate text chat. That only
and they're not supposed to talk. It's in good faith that if you are dead, just don't you don't
occasionally
talk,
I unmute
dead.
My mic and go boo, but that's it.
Yeah, sometimes I'll unmute. I'll just say this is garbage. But
and also you can wander
it's
around
just
the map,
it's been a fun time
as a ghost once you die, but the living players cannot see you, only other ghosts can see you.
And you just have to watch on it.
And you still have to complete. That's my favorite part of being a ghost, is you're still expected to complete your tasks.
The dead's job is never done. This has been a thing, though, for at least a good month-ish or so in terms of its exploding popularity. I even want to say the past 2 to 3 months.
Yeah.
But I just even started playing it more often last week. I mean, I've even told Rich multiple times over the course of some episodes that our friend Tom always tries us to get to play this. And he never succeeded for weeks.
Also, I tell him to shut up. My day job is with Tom, and he was really hounding about it. And
he was really dogging me on for it, and I just kept saying, no, get out. So he everybody's pretty pleased with it. So even if you don't have people that you can play with assuredly, I would even still recommend that you try to find just a Reddit community or a Discord or somebody to play with. I'm sure you could once you get past the crippling social anxiety that everybody faces.
Okay,
but I think it's just a fun game. And you can play it for free on the phone. That's what I do. I've been playing for hours. And I haven't paid a buck. I'm a cheapo. Meanwhile, I'd spend $5 on a Keebler Elf cookie.
Do you have those? Is that an EL Fudge?
Yeah, no. I got the ones that are like Chips Ahoy, but they got the M&M's in them.
Oh, those are good.
And I always remember, do you want to know what's wacky about those? I always remember as a kid when I would buy those cookies, they would never say that they were M&M's. They were just the chocolate candies in the middle that were M&M's, but everybody was on the same page where it kind of wasn't.
Yeah.
Now, full branding on the cover. They're just it's M&M's.
Initially, they didn't have that partnership, is the thing.
Yeah, I feel like the whole veil has been uncovered, and they were just saying, hey, you know what? You were right all along. It was M&M's.
Stop scraping the M's off.
They're there now.
I like a good fudge stripe. I like a good EL fudge.
You know, I just saw my younger brother just bought the EL fudge cookies, and they made, I don't even know, what do you call them? Head Keebler?
Ernie.
The Keebler? Yeah, Ernie. They made Ernie this weird 3D model on the cover of them now. He doesn't have that classic 2D cartoony look anymore. He's like this 3D cartoon.
Thanks, I hate
but
it.
But he's looking at you. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like a side shot either. He's facing you. He just looks so strange. I don't know why companies try to keep advancing in the market with this. It's like, I don't want to buy 3D Ernie. I want my classic 2D Tom and Jerry looking Ernie.
Give me the classic 2D Ernie where I can flip the cookie over and look at his rump.
Well, it reminds me of the I'm gonna ignore that. It reminds me of the, you know, like the Rice Krispies, Snap, Crackle, and Pop? Like, it was chill when they were 2D cartoons, but now they're just 3D models?
I don't like
it's
that.
Just weird. It's just strange. Or, like, the Trix Rabbit. Normalized 2D animation again.
I like animation. I
maybe they just thought it was a pain in the ass.
I'm having a hard time watching that Dragon's Dogma anime.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I
don't
know
why they did that. I hate it.
It reminds me of what they did to Berserk, where the new anime of it, it's fucking god-awful in terms of animation. And
like, who thinks
it's 3D.
That's better?
I don't even know. I think it's like a cost-cutting kind of thing. I don't know. But it just looks rigid and stiff, and it just looks bad. This whole shift into 3D, it's been happening for like the past decade. It's not getting better. Things are just... Ernie's getting worse. It's detracting me from wanting to buy their products. I don't know. That's why I stick to, I just happen to be in the store with those. I usually stick to those, Malomars or things where you just can't really see the mascot on the covers because there are none.
Yeah,
you just don't even want it. But Among Us is great,
yeah,
anyways. Eat Malomars. Among Us is great. Other than that, though, other than the social deduction bits, I've been getting back into Monster Hunter because they just came out with their last patch, I believe it is. Their last content update of the game, and they added Fatalis, or Fatalis, I don't even know how to call it.
I think
it's Fatalis.
I think it's Fatalis as well.
Fatalis, pretty much, it is the big daddy black dragon, and he's like the bat, like, it's Fatalis. Apparently, he's very well known in the Monster Hunter community to just wreck you up really badly.
That's the thing. He's in the business of wrecking your ass.
I mean, the name is called Fatalis, and it's just a really hard fight. But after this, you know, you can get all of its weapons and armor, and that's considered the best of the best. So this is supposed to be like the kind of the last challenge for a lot of players. I've always watched YouTube videos or streams of some Monster Hunter players, and their dedication to the game is almost MMO worthy, where they just have nothing but materials and materials all over the place, and it always inspires me to play it again. So I started getting back in the Monster Hunter world again like 2-3 weeks ago. I'm having another blast with it. I put in like another 60 hours, which is absurd, but it's a great game. So I'm trying now to just finish up the Iceborne expansion content, and then try to eventually, over the course of the next half year probably, knowing myself, work my way up to beating it, because I want to try that Monster Hunter Rise game.
Yes.
On the Switch, because I always love when Nintendo releases a Monster Hunter game on the portable devices. The 3DS games at the time, a little weird to play, but I still loved 4 Ultimate. I still think that's the best one.
More in the vein of those. Monster Hunter World seems like a different breed at this point.
It's fantastic, that game. It's fantastic.
Monster Hunter. But yeah, that's cool.
I wish they just kept it. I wonder how, honestly, what the roadmap is for those kinds of games. Because number one, they're going to make another
Monster
one for
Hunter
sure.
Universe.
I thought about that, or Monster Hunter Infinite, just like Halo. But I was thinking about it, and I'm genuinely curious to see where they take that brand onward, because if they just come out the Monster Hunter World 2, I'm in for it. It's just a perfect system that just looks great. They made all the quality of life changes that you could ever hope for. It's just such a great game, and look, man, I was actually hoping for years that they would just keep building it.
Just give me another insane what? Capcom booth that it can
I
invent
know.
In.
This is why I miss... The one thing I do miss is say, like, yeah, I miss PAX and all those, but you want to know what I truly miss? I miss booth presence. I feel like over time, businesses... And this is why I didn't really care that, say, most of the conventions were kind of taken a step back over the years, not even just from COVID, just in general. Because Monster Hunter with Capcom, I remember when they had those big Zeppelins or whatever the fuck they were, the big airships, and... I was going to say Zeppeli. The big airships.
Those big fried and, Zeppelis.
And you could go in there, and I remember they were advertising, I believe it was 3 or 4 Ultimate. It was so much fun. You would just sit in the airship, and you would just play on the 3DS, and I thought that was so cool.
And there was the tents and...
Yeah, Monster Hunter just has a very... they had those TPs. You would have a panic attack now with COVID. You would just get shoved in a TP with three other people, and just play a game with them on the 3DSs on these pillows. It was, their booth presence was strong. I loved Capcom for that. And I always love Monster Hunter. The Monster Hunter Festa was so much fun that earlier this year for PAX. I'm just hoping
I have
that...
I of that.
I have your stuff still.
I'll get it eventually. I have a lovely wall decoration for you that's been sitting in my house for the better part of a year.
I know. Every time I like talk to people, like I have something for you. I just hope that long-term, they don't do something like an online model, because I know they had a Monster Hunter Online game in Japan back in the day, but I'm hoping that whenever they make Monster Hunter World 2, I'm really hoping that they'll just continue to update it continuously. Almost like
make
its own MMO
a platform,
in a way.
Yeah,
just keep it going. That's almost what I really hope that they would do with World. I don't know what the logistics are behind why they didn't, or why they kind of stopped it with their second biggest expansion. Could just be logistical and they're like, let's just make another title like Destiny.
Well, I'm sure it might be the...
I hope they continue it.
They were thinking of it in terms of a live game, but then when next gen starts to tout and things like that, you go, it's easier to just have a different infrastructure going forward.
Like, this is the type of game where if you had a game as a service or a live game, this makes sense
totally
to me. Because this is a game that's literally built on the back of grinding
and Geralt
and
will
playing.
Show up again.
Yeah, and crafting and doing... Oh, Geralt. I still have his armor,
and
too.
Dante,
that was such a wacky... Yeah, that was such
Ryu.
A wacky little thing. I love the... Capcom, I gotta say, Capcom, whenever they do those crossovers or just little Easter eggs, they're excellent at that. It's so much fun. You could have Mr. X as the guild quest handler, and he can give you quests instead of the woman that usually
so
does
weird.
It. And it's just Mr. X. Yeah, it's just so strange, but it works. So I've just been going back into that.
A dragon punch a
if
dragon.
Anybody ever wants to get into Monster Hunter ever, because number one, it's daunting and it's taken me years to even bother to get to where I am. I would honestly suggest picking up World sometime, because you can get it on the cheap. I even think it's 30% off right now on Steam, but you can get it on the cheap. And also look forward, if you have a Switch, to getting Rise, which is next year. I think it's next March. That's going to be a good game. So you can absolutely go back. It's never too late to get into these. The community for these games are also so ridiculously strong across all titles. Apparently, I just found that there's still a strong group going playing Monster Hunter Freedom Unite for the PSP, which is insane.
Doing that.
That's insane to me.
Claw grip.
That was my first Monster Hunter back in the day. I got it for the PSP because God bless that system.
Love
and rest in peace, Darkstalkers. And I remember playing that game for the first time. I thought Monster Hunter was shit. I hated it because I had no idea as a kid what the fuck I was doing. And the concept of finding the monsters without waypoints or anything, I was like, this game sucks. But now, I'm prance dancing.
You gotta.
I'm in. But now I'm back in the Monster Hunter flow. Long story short, having a ball. I talk about it so much because I love it.
It's worth talking about.
But... Rich, what I want to actually hear from you from last week, too, because you've had some time to play it. 13 Sentinels.
I...
Hot?
I love this fucking game, Eric.
Hot or not?
Hot.
Should Vanillaware just stay in the game forever? Was Yoko Taro right? Should they just never...
He was right.
Stop?
My favorite part is the underlying tones of, like, very Vanillaware shit. is like when you're like, this story's really compelling, and then it's like, let's go see the school nurse and her heaving bust because this is a VanillaWare game.
I love that shit.
But I really fucking like this game. So I should say up front for people, it's more on the visual novel end. There is a tactical gameplay component, but it's not a crazy difficult tactics game, and it's also very minimalist visually. It's like you're looking at a digital output of the city and moving icons that represent, you know, your mechs and the kaiju you're fighting. And it's fun. It's got a pretty, like, stellar look to it, but it's not, like, deep down you're looking at detailed models of these mechs kind of shit.
I love the visual presentation.
I think
it's
really good. And then the visuals on the characters in the sort of visual novel parts of it are really good. It's kind of difficult to follow, like, but it's meant to sort of reveal more to you the deeper you get, because it's following multiple timelines is the thing I'll say off the bat. Going as far back as the 1940s and then as far forward as 2064. With these characters, these kids, these 13 protagonists, fighting in these sentinels, these mecha, and against this invading kaiju force that destroys the world in 2064. The bulk of the story takes place in the 80s when the kaiju first appear. But the way the story unravels itself is interesting, because you'll slowly find out that, like, these characters you were first introduced to in 85 are actually from the year, like, 2021, and they were sent back here to prepare
so
for this
day. So many
years
being thrown around.
It's insane.
I love this game.
My favorite character is Koji. He is a character from the 80s. He's got pomp. He's a Japanese delinquent. I believe he's Sentinel number 22. He's there to fuck people's days up. And then one of the more interesting aspects, I think, is that you're dealing with four generations of mechs that all behave very differently. So you got first generation mechs, which have much more mobility, but basically no ranged weaponry. Like, they have some light machine guns, but they're mostly about, like, punching through a target. And then by the time you get to a fourth generation mech, they're very limited mobility-wise, but are mostly equipped with, like, long-range missiles and stuff like that. So when a combat scenario starts, you need to really look at what you're equipped with and how you're going to defend the point you're tasked with defending, being like, okay, so I have these mechs that can kind of move in and start really punching the bigger kaiju, and then I have, like, these units to kind of swarm out long-range missile attacks. There is a lot of strategy to it.
I encourage anybody to just look up the art for this game, and if that doesn't sell you, I don't know, then it's not the game for you. But every time I look at the art style of this game, even as you were talking about it, I was like, man, I want to go look this up one more time. It's just so good looking.
And
it's such an appealing art style. And it's not actually, compared to other VanillaWare titles from what I'm seeing, and you can confirm this, it doesn't seem to be overtly gratuitous in the sex appeal department.
No.
I feel like they actually, compared to Miramasa or even Dragon's Crown, they really dialed it back, because it looks like it's just high schoolers.
Well,
and
considering it, most of the characters are high school students, I think it's...
Yeah. They don't go too off. And you may say, well, what kind of sicko would ever do... I implore
the
you.
School nurse...
Don't fight me on this.
Nurse,
this happens.
Is the most hypersexualized character in this game.
Yeah, because she's the adult,
yeah.
Probably. Yeah.
Then the main way the sort of visual novel aspect works, I really like, and it's pretty unique. It's called the Thought Cloud system. Mm-hmm. Basically, you pick these scenarios that you go through, and whenever somebody brings up something relevant, it gets added to your Thought Cloud, that you hit triangle then to look through your Thought Cloud, and you can sort of reflect on these ideas, or you can bring them up to other characters. And bringing something up to a certain character might feed you some new information. Mm. And this thought cloud grows in each character separately as the game continues. And you're encouraged to go back to scenarios once you have more ideas, because, say, bringing up a fourth generation sentinel in Koji's first scenario, a thing he didn't know about previously, might bring up some new dialogue and unveil more story to you. And the game will tell you when you've uncovered every piece of information in a certain scenario, and it's encouraging you to go back, because there's a fast forward button that I really like, that basically, if you've done a scenario already, you slam on that fast forward and it auto shuts it off when it gets to dialogue you haven't seen before.
It just looks like a good visual novel kind of game.
It 100% is that.
So I'm definitely over time. It's just another RPG too. I'm just like, Jesus Christ, stop. I'm definitely going to play this because I think ever since Mirror Master for the Wii, I've been playing VanillaWare's titles every time they come out. I still go back to Dragon's Crown every once in a while. Game's great. Good game. So I'm definitely going to go to this one. I imagine it will be backwards compatible. I imagine any new game will probably be.
Yeah, I would.
But you told me they have a little icon on the cases, though,
yes,
right?
Yes, but I don't think this one quite hit that date, like, in terms of when it was finished. At the very least, I haven't noticed an icon.
Well, I would be surprised if any newer game doesn't click with it.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised.
I don't see anything, but I'm not sure if that's just something they're requiring of first-party titles or...
I was actually thinking the other day, too, because I don't... And correct me if I'm wrong. They never said anything about digitally downloaded games, right?
No, but I feel like it's a safe assumption at this point that they're using the same storefront.
That they're going to be able to transfer over into
your...
Yeah,
I would...
I'm really hoping, because they haven't... I don't think...
There's no way...
They've said anything about this.
But there's no way Microsoft is doing that, and they will be fucked if they... If they didn't think...
I just saw Keely... played Blinks the Time Sweeper from his other Xbox account, and I was thinking, wow, that's actually one of my biggest gripes with companies like Sony, is that why can I play, and it's all down in the dirty code base, I'm sure.
It all has
obviously.
To do with the chips and stuff. Like
the fact that I can play Suikoden 2 on my PlayStation 3 virtually, but I can't carry any of the PlayStation titles over. Or the fact that the PS4 didn't have the PlayStation titles.
The PS3 in particular is a very specific case because...
Yeah, it's very... That's what I mean. Like, in the nitty-gritty, it has something in the underbelly that's not easily replicated.
You still can't,
but
like, safely emulate PS3 stuff because of the chips they used.
Yeah, well, the chip system, sure. But I'm just saying, like, in general, when you're talking about... Like, say Nintendo's and their virtual consoles, yeah? It's like, everybody has the capability... To create the emulation to just go
from
their consoles or in their digital space services. I just don't get why, actually, curiously enough, Sony just didn't continue it afterward. I don't even, maybe they didn't find it to be profitable,
well,
or maybe there is something wrong with it long term that people found that I'm blatantly being ignorant about.
Sony even says, like, they've been unable to emulate PS3. Like,
I'm not talking about the PlayStation 3 games. I'm talking about, PlayStation 4.
I couldn't tell you.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, like, actually having a PlayStation 2. And I'm not the biggest backwards compatibility kind of guy, so long as the newer console can emulate or at least be backwards compatible with the previous
console. It might even be
that's
a,
really my biggest
a
thing.
Short-sighted thing. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if you see that come back on the PS5.
Well, because, again, I see things like, say, Blinks the Time Sweeper. And yeah, sure, it's Blinks. I don't give a shit. I mean, I do, but not really. And I'm just sitting there thinking, wow, that's pretty damn
also,
cool. Like, you could just play.
Don't forget.
And that is a leg up that Microsoft
don't
has.
Forget,
you could just do
they
that.
They were limited, but PS2 Classics did become a thing on PS4.
No, they did. They did.
But I wouldn't be surprised
it wasn't in the same capacity that they were introducing
PS3. No. But that's what I'm saying. I wouldn't be surprised if you see that come back in a bigger way in the PS5 down the line. If you see a PS1 Classics, a PS2 Classics section, stuff like that.
I really do hope so. I'm just always so curious as to why... Because Sony's really just about pushing the hardware and the new capabilities. They're not really too... For... Always with the company, that's always the mixed messages. For one, that's always about generations. They're never too vocal.
No, yeah.
What they want to do with their previous generations half the time. Like, they're always talking about what's moving forward, which is fine. That's what pushes
they're
the medium.
They're like, what about Spyro? And like, there's nothing for you back there.
Yeah, they go, just stop. Turn around. There's nothing going on back there. Like, why can't I play Running Wild? Like, come on. Give me a break.
They don't want you to.
I know. So, I don't know. I just think that's pretty cool. And from what I've seen with the Series X, too, the load times are also insane.
Yeah. I'd imagine
the Instant Player or whatever it's called.
I'd imagine the PS5 also touts that as far as those custom SSDs and shit go. Like, shit seems impressive.
I've taken another look at the hardware because some people have gotten the hardware just for playing.
They've gotten, yeah,
I'm debugged. Convinced that the PlayStation 5 is probably going to be the most ridiculous looking console so far.
Oh, no, 100% is. Did you see the images of the PS5 next to the Xbox?
Yeah.
Okay, let me put this in perspective for you. The Xbox Series X is big. The PlayStation 5 is fucking gigantic.
Bigger.
It's like a foot and a half tall.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, where are you going to fit all that next-gen capability? Where do you think that goes, huh?
I don't know.
It's like... I
somehow Microsoft crammed it into that weird little obelisk, but PlayStation had to build the Space Museum.
I'm still down with the obelisk. I know, it's like Sony is the flashy cousin, and Xbox is just the conservative
I like dresser. Them both for different reasons.
I can't stop looking at PlayStation 5 just looking like a popped collar. I just can't. I can't unsee it. I would never
slap Sekiro Kaiba's head on top of it every time I look at it.
I would never, that's what I say too. I would never put this thing on its side. I just
no,
wouldn't.
It's a sin.
It looks weird. You could do it. It just looks strange.
It's going to sit next to my 46-inch TV that's probably as tall as.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But I still dig the Series X's look. I'm still a fan of the black box. I'm a simple man.
The PS5 looks like a weird oscillating fan.
Somebody's going to walk in one day and say, what the? I'm like, oh, that? That's my PlayStation 5. That's the next generation.
I'm glad you asked.
Game. Yeah, thank you for asking. That foot and a half obelisk is the next generation of gaming.
So what?
You know what? Sit down.
Why don't
let
you
me
take
show
a
you
seat
something.
And we'll pop in metal
Let me
arms.
Show you Ratchet and Clank. But yeah, it just looks fucking insane. So I'm hoping that long-term, though, Sony actually adopts some of those classics again, because I... Just give me the emulation. Like, I'm wondering half the time if they just... If all these companies just don't think it's worthy enough to invest in these kinds of titles, which is fair, but...
Because I can't
I
speak
know.
To the work that has to be done to get it there.
Yeah,
that's
I
the
don't
problem.
Know. Exactly. I'm speaking out of ignorance, which I'm going to try my hardest not to. You got
to
consider
gonna
the other
really
side
hard
of the fence
to be
here.
More ignorant.
That's a good goal. The year's almost over. I mean, that's a good New Year's 2021
I'm
going to
try and
goal.
Be really short-sighted.
Yeah, I'm going to be really short-sighted and irate and just constantly combat people who tell me I'm wrong.
And I'm
going
I'm gonna dig in to my opinions and convictions regardless of the facts presented before me.
Yeah, let me tell you, if you thought I dug in my heels before...
Get ready for 2021.
We're going in. I'm going to be sticking my heels in like an ostrich in the ground. We're going in. Other than the 13 Sentinels, though, which is a big thumbs up, what is going under?
I played a very little bit of this. It's another roguelike. I hope you're ready for more of those.
I love roguelikes. There's so many.
It's roguelike season.
Hades already did the job.
Going Under is a roguelike set in a startup company. Okay. You are playing as an intern at this startup that makes seltzer that is also a meal replacement. The setup's really like, so the setup is basically you get there and you're supposed to be like an accounting intern, but as it turns out they have like an AI that does all their accounting for them, so there's really nothing for you to do, and you're like talking to your boss like, you know what, as long as you're around, why don't you make yourself useful, you could take care of that goblin. And he's like, excuse me? And he's like, yeah, that goblin running around the office, he's a real problem. So you kill a goblin, and then you are forced to go into the basement and clear a dungeon of goblins.
So the subtitle for Going Under, it's Going Under Internships Are Heck.
Yeah. It's got a very cool art style. It, unlike a lot of roguelikes, it does that thing where it splits it into multiple little dungeons instead of one consistent crawl.
Yeah, it's very, it looks very colorful, very poppy.
And like every it. Single one of said dungeons has its own unique kind of theme to it, which is fun because every theme is like a different failed startup. Like,
oh, it's just buried deeper.
Yeah, like the first one is like a pretty basic like tech company run by goblins called Joblin.
Joblin.
And then the second one that I started into is a failed dating app run by demons.
That's fun.
And yeah, the main hook is you can use anything as a weapon. Like anything you could find, you could pick up, like a chair, a desk, a computer, and just start bashing away at enemies with it.
It just seems like a little, it's a how much is it?
$20. It's on Switch, it's on PC.
Yeah. Honestly, looks like a little fun game. I like the style of it. It's definitely unique.
Yeah, for sure. And
remember,
good writing all the way through. Like the shop item descriptions, like one of the health food items, like to restore your health in between runs is avocado toast. And the description is like, avocado toast is an affordable alternative to health insurance.
Remember, speaking of being able to use anything, remember Scribblenauts?
Hell yeah, I remember Scribblenauts.
What a great idea.
When you'd summon God.
Yeah, I used to love that as a kid.
It was...
Just be able to use anything.
Anything within reason.
Yeah, within reason, of course. What a fun little
thing. There were very few problems you couldn't solve with a manticore.
Or a dragon. Yeah. You just let it go, and then they'd fight. But I'm kind of into the roguelike. I like learning about different roguelikes just because Hades right now is still my game of the year contender. It's still going. We're going.
That's the case for me as well.
We're talking best in class here, but I still like to see what other studios come up with because I think regardless, Going Under just sounds like a very unique type of game, and I still kind of dig that. Like, it's just
it's
fun.
It's anything another... that has
decent stories with some cool art styles and is different in
and
some
it's got
way.
Good, it's got good humor. Like, that's the more appealing sense of it to me is, like, it's one of those...
Rather than just killing blindly.
Yeah, it's got a good sense of humor.
That's good. Crash Bandicoot 4, you played it?
I have. I played some of that game.
Good?
Yeah. There's some weird shit in there that kind of irks me a little bit, but for the most part, it's really good. I'll run through, like, some of the better stuff. That modern... mode, which is the designated mode, is way better than anything I think they've done before. It starts you off by... It gets rid of the live system entirely.
Mm-hmm.
So your checkpoints are permanent, and it replaces the live system with a death counter, which I think is way better because it feels way more impactful when you're like, I've died 20 fucking times. And at the same time, like, all of the unlocks are tied to gems, which one of the gems for every level is get through it with under 3 deaths. So there's still incentive to keep that sort of thing going. Level design is great. Platforming feels good. Another one of the best additions is they added a little yellow shadow marker to show you where you're going to land when you jump, which is kind of a godsend in a difficult 3D platformer like Crash.
Mm-hmm.
Writing just as humorous as like the series has been in the past. You know, you're on another mission to stop Cortex. I've mostly been doing, you know, the bigger stuff, which is the Crash levels. Like, you can play as Crash or Coco. They play identically. And then I played as 2 of the other 3 available characters that have their own levels that play uniquely. Tana, Crash's girlfriend from the first game, is back and has her own unique skill set. She's got a grappling hook that feels really good. I have one big complaint about her levels, and that is she can do those sort of wall jump things, and they feel terrible. We've been doing this in 3D platformers for years. How do you fuck that up?
Because, physics.
Like, they feel hard. They feel fucking terrible.
Which is actually surprising for a game... like Crash.
Yeah, like there's specific markers you have to hit, and it just feels imprecise, and it sucks, to tell you the truth.
That's a bummer.
And then...
Especially because they, to be fair, in the first 3, they didn't have any of that crap, yeah. But this is why, when you're introducing new mechanics, I'm actually disappointed to hear that there's just newer stuff thrown in there, because I kind of just liked it if it was just... same as it ever was.
That stuff is just different. Those levels are few and far between, though, and like they're not impassable. They just like points where I'm like, I don't like how this feels.
No, but it's just it's rigid. But it just makes you feel a little rigid when you're playing.
The other 2 playable characters are Dr. Neo Cortex himself.
I saw
and Dingo Dial. I haven't played as Cortex yet. Before we started, I played the first Dingo Dial level, and I might love playing as Dingo Dial.
I knew it. They throw in the cool character to offset all the crappy mechanics.
So Dingo Dial also plays mechanically entirely different. They made him much larger. He's a big boy.
Okay.
And he's got like sort of a suction cannon. So he can suck up Wumpa Fruit. He can suck up TNT crates and then fire them at enemies. And he's got kind of a long form hover jump using that air cannon. All of his stuff feels really good. Like, it's so different, and it feels really good.
Did they, in terms of the way that the levels are designed, I'm assuming that they changed up the overall kind of structure of the previous Crash games,
not,
where it was very just straight, and you had to, like, go.
It is not the hub-spoke thing. but it is very linear. It's like a Mario style world map.
Okay. I just want to know they didn't do anything too crazy. Remember when Crash back in Twinsanity was literally riding Cortex's body?
Yeah.
As a snowboard?
Oh, I remember.
He really came a long way.
He's back in you know, his fourth ever installment. No other games after three.
That's pretty wild to
me. There's a lot of skins in this game. But don't worry, you can't pay money for them. They're all tied to those gems you unlock for doing well in levels.
Thank God. Just normalize this shit already.
I actually just unlocked the PS1 Crash skin.
Yeah. Oh, does that polygons?
You like
and
polygons?
I gotta say, I love when the only other game that did that where I just adored it was Metal Gear Solid, where they just had classic Snake face. Mm. What a great little Easter egg!
Classic stuff.
I love that crap. But I'm glad to hear that. And I'm assuming it looks great because even just telling by the graphics, it looks
that
fantastic.
Art's really good. It looks fantastic. I would say like that Tana thing is the one thing that I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this, but the rest of it feels great. It's fucking hard. Like in a way that doesn't feel wrong.
Mm.
Like this is a fucking hard game, but I really like it.
Nice. I have to get, and it's 60,
yeah,
right?
It's a full 60.
Yeah. I mean,
it's a big game is my understanding.
Don't let this distract you from the fact that Crash Team Racing did not win the best racing game award.
It's insane to me.
And it was Mario Kart app.
That's insane to me.
Just don't let it distract you. I'm just saying, keep your eyes open.
I hate this world.
What I want to hear from you, just to justify my own purchase, and I'm sure what everybody else is curious, is Rogue Squad... not Rogue Squadron. Oh my god, I've been calling it that as well.
Because
it mirrors it. Is Squadron good?
Oh, fuck yeah.
Is Star Wars Squadrons a good
it's
game?
It's so good. I love this game.
Worth the $40 price of admission?
Fuck yeah. I've played, I'd say, maybe a solid 2 hours of the story. And beyond that, I put like 5 into the multiplayer.
Okay.
Story's good. It's, you are playing from 2 different perspectives. You're playing as Vanguard 5 of Vanguard Squadron for the New Republic. And you are playing as Titan 3 of Titan Squadron for the Imperial Army. You know, both game takes place post Return of the Jedi. There's some really cool mission design in there. All the ships feel really unique, and while the story isn't incredibly deep, it really seems to serve as more of a way to teach you some unique stuff that's going to help you in the online. Mm-hmm. And the online feels great. I played mostly the dogfight mode, which I was telling you earlier is a 5v5, New Republic versus Imperials. And has a big focus on just, you know, getting kills. And in that, basically, like, there's, like, 4 viable ships, 2 for each side. Like, I would only use, like, X-Wing and A-Wing for the New Republic. And then on the Imperial end, TIE Fighters and TIE Interceptors. Because they are the close combat, you know, ships. Mm-hmm. And then there are the Fleet Assault missions, which are really cool. Mike and I did one of those as part of a stream the other day. Where... essentially, you're split into, again, it is a 5v5. The New Republic has a frigate. The Imperials have a Star Destroyer. You are trying to take down each other's capital ships. And you do so by, you want to build morale. Because in addition to the 5v5, there's a bunch of AI ships on each side. And destroying living enemies gets you more morale. You still get some from destroying AI. Once your morale is high enough, you're able to go on the offensive and go, okay, now we're going to push to start attacking the frigate. And you start taking down, like, key points of it. You know, you'll target the shield generators. You'll target the turrets on the deck. There's just so much strategy in it, though, that they teach you so much. The ships behave so differently. I just learned, and this has been really helpful in taking out tails and stuff, is when you have a big target like that, like a Star Destroyer... one of the best things you can do is kind of get low on top of the deck and then slam on your boost so the turrets can't really hit you. And then mm-hmm. you kill all powers to the engine as you turn around the side of it and you can kind of slingshot yourself. Like, everything feels really good. If anybody looks at that the saves from that stream over on SwordChomp's channel, I even mentioned at one point, because somebody in chat was like, oh, are you guys enjoying it? And I'm like, well, what would you say? I'm like, Mike, I think you can attest to, As I've been blowing up ships, I've been unironically yelling woo.
Just going,
yeah, like, it feels really good.
I was going to say, if I was just doing a slingshot maneuver, I would just be screaming the whole time. Just because it'd be fun.
Yeah.
But it honestly just looks like a great, enjoyable game.
Also, if...
that is just dogfighting. It is just what it is.
If your teammates don't respond with a check-in when you match online, then just disconnect immediately. Because...
Yeah, honestly, just
I look to see what my call sign is when I get in there, and immediately I just go on the voice comms, and I'm like, all right, Vanguard 6, standing by. All wings, check in. And then if nobody responds, I'm like, you guys fucking suck.
On the I have a question actually about the online for just the match structure. I never got to ask you before. When you're doing the Star Destroyer missions where you have to take one down, can people play as the Empire?
Yes.
To detract you from doing that?
They're trying to take down a New Republic frigate.
Okay, so you're both trying to take
you
down
something.
You
need to get your morale meter to the top, and when basically the morale meter is like sparring back and forth. Once your team has it high enough, then you can go on the attack. And the thing is, then, if the Empire pushes it while you're on the attack, now you have to go on the defense. Because now they've pushed you back, and they're attacking your frigate.
That's pretty
cool. It's a push and pull. But I talked a little bit about this to you earlier. Like, the main thing I love is how different the ships feel. And not just, like, you know, X-Wing to A-Wing. But, I mean, that is the case. Like, A-Wings are, you know, your speedy little interceptors, like, for taking down TIEs and stuff. But the Imperial side to the New Republic are so different. Like, one of the main mechanics is you want to use the directional buttons to change where you're siphoning power. You want to siphon most of your power to shields, engines, or weapons. But on a TIE fighter, there are no shields. So they have some unique capabilities because they only have engines and they only have weapons. So what you can choose to do at points, which is, like, a good strategic move, is I could drain all powers from my weapons for a few seconds, disabling them. And, like, overcharge my engines to try and lose a tail. Or vice versa, I could completely kill my engines and siphon all power to weapons. And just leave myself dead in the water, but with, like, over-pumped weapons.
Yeah, you'd just be, like, glass cannon.
Exactly.
So beyond that, it's not really just the HUD that's all different. It's also just the capability themselves of the ships. And they actually feel unique.
They feel
right?
very
So it's
unique.
Not like it's just a little minor difference. You actually feel like you're piloting a different type of ship.
Yeah, and then beyond that, I mean, there's a lot of unlocks that are not tied to real-life purchases. It's like an EA game from an alternate universe.
Imagine just giving a standing ovation just because the company just stopped doing the thing that they shouldn't have been doing.
Yeah, it's crazy. But there's different weapons you can put in different spots. There are different hull types. Like... I ended up switching the hull type on my X-Wing to what they call the, I think it's called a dampener hull type. Basically what it does is it gives you, I think, 20% less overall health, but it takes twice as long for enemies to lock onto you. Which
Fun.
Is like...
And then that way you can maneuver
And just be yelling and going woo a lot and blowing... Explosions look good. I love racing through an explosion right after I blow up a ship and just seeing the flames, like, hit the cockpit sides. There's a no HUD mode, which seems fun because all the instrument panels are fully operate. Like those, we definitely talked about this like personally before. How much I love like original Star Wars tech and like these super like radar looking, like they're all fully functioning instrument panels, and I use those more than I do the HUD stuff. This game feels so good.
It looks good, feels good, plays good. What was that?
That was a shelf. Give me a second.
Yeah, you can go. Rich is gonna go diagnose them. Oh, his for those, I'm gonna tell Rich to keep this. So Rich's whole shelf just now, where he keeps his amiibos, I'm looking right now on the camera, they're all over his couch, and it's just amiibos splayed everywhere. So He looks confounded. He doesn't know what to do. This poor man. It's what happens when you have collectibles. They just all fall. Honestly, I feel this because it's like, whenever you put anything on a shelf, this is the one nightmare I have, where you look at it sometimes. Like, I just recently put a bunch of books on my shelf, and I was thinking, if this thing caves, I'm gonna be destroyed. Oh, here it comes. I think it's coming back. Because I think it gave up. I was just saying that is the one nightmare that I always have. It's like whenever I'm looking at any shelf I have, or I just sometimes occasionally look in my bedroom sometimes, I'm just thinking if this thing fell, I would be upset.
Yeah.
Are you okay? Fine. You okay?
It's really not that big a deal. There's just a floor.
It's just all your amiibos.
Covered in amiibo.
I mean, there's worse ways to go. There's worse ways to lose.
I'll figure that out later.
It's okay.
Star
Wars is good, though.
Yeah, the customization is good, like I was saying. There's lots of fun cosmetic pilot unlocks. There's lots of fun ship skins and customizations for, like, your dash and stuff. Like, my X-Wing has a little Ewok bobblehead on the dash. And my TIE Fighter has a severed protocol droid head hanging.
And if you do have VR capability, I heard that the VR was pretty damn cool. For both PSVR and also just PC VR.
I would imagine.
So if you have those, I mean, I would even be more compelled to get this too, because that seems like a cool experience.
For sure.
$40, buy Star Wars?
Do it.
They'll probably come out with DLC for the other eras.
I hope they do.
Yeah, I heard just one gripe with it was that the story's not really the story, but you can play it for the multiplayer anyways, at least in my opinion. That's what I would get it for.
But it seems fine.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, I think I always like to look at games like these where, let's just say it's not really much of a story, but the multiplayer's there, that further incentivizes future iterations where maybe the next time they'll just make a Rogue Squadron-esque.
There's one weird choice.
Because now that they got the system down, they got all this stuff, and they could just make a game on top of it again.
The one weird choice, I think, is the most compelling character is not the one you're playing as.
Oh, so it's just somebody else.
No, the game starts with the first mission you're playing as an Imperial pilot, and your squad commander ends up defecting to the Rebellion during your first mission.
Okay.
And then it jumps ahead to the New Republic, but you're not playing as the defecting TIE pilot. He's like the Admiral, and he's around, and you're playing as a new pilot serving under him, and then on the Imperial side, you're still playing as the pilot from that day, trying to sort of redeem your squadron after what happened that day. But wouldn't it be more interesting if like the person you're playing as on the Republic side was the defecting TIE pilot? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but then that would be good. That would end up being a good decision. That's kind
it's
of annoying.
Weird.
And a little puzzling.
It's a weird choice.
I would be surprised if they made this entire, or anybody makes any entire game. You're just like, well, that's strange. Like, why would you even?
Yeah.
That's a weird one. I imagine in the future, though, they'll end up improving upon it. But it's nice to at least know that this genre of game is not dead for Star Wars pilot games. Because I have to say, it's like an untapped resource to not make something in this new gen. Because it could look fucking incredible. And I'm at least glad that we're taking a step where it looks nice and they can maybe inspire other devs to also take a crack at it too. If not, then just themselves. Totally. Thank God there's no microtransactions and they didn't EA this whole thing up.
Yeah,
and it was $40. They could have easily charged $60 for this crap.
It would have been absolutely terrible.
Good price, though.
Everybody spend the first credit you get on making the hologram that appears in your cockpit to give you orders, Admiral Akbar. It is the
yes, please.
Choice. One of the options is Salacious Crumb.
Why would I want Salacious?
Why wouldn't they make a Jabba?
If anything, yeah, why not?
But in,
why not?
On the Imperial side,
rest in peace,
you can get Vader, which is the one I did for that.
That's pretty cool. It's just nice to have something a little extra. Other than that, really quick news. In the Spider-Man remastered version, they changed Peter Parker's face.
They did.
How do you think the internet reacted? Apparently they sent death threats.
Yeah.
it's like, okay.
Totally measured response.
Yeah.
Here's a weird thought I have on that. The reasoning they gave was, and like I don't personally care either way, but the reasoning they gave was that they found an actor who was a better match to the mocap actor they used. All right. But
which
this Spider-Man sure does look a whole lot more like Tom Holland now.
Yeah. I was going to, and you want to know something? To even preface, the reason why I laugh at that, like, say, with the reactions, is because people are insane. I laugh because it's just, like, it's terrible, but at the same time, it's just thinking, what won't anybody send a death threat over these days in this freaking community? It's preposterous. It's preposterous.
Kill your family.
Second, I read that reasoning, I don't care. No. I have no horse in this race whatsoever. That's bullshit. That's totally bullshit.
My main thought is like, I don't believe that. Whatever you want to do seems fine.
Don't believe that for a second. I don't care if that even is. It just, to me, it just seems pretty, like, okay. Like, he does. He looks like Tom Holland now. So, let it happen. I can imagine they got pressure from the top and they just said, make it happen now. This man does not look like the way. He even looks younger, yeah, actually, compared to his other counterpart.
The thing is, though, I didn't even realize this at the time. I guess because the actor they had did look older. He's supposed to be, like, 22.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's crazy, but small thing. I again, it's just in the weird world of video games. Sometimes things like this happen. You're just thinking,
and then
like,
you
what?
Think, well, how can he be that story of a Spider-Man? But I'm like, actually, if he's 22, and we are to assume he's been Spider-Man since he was like 16,
6 years.
Yeah, he's
it's
had plenty
time.
Of time to acquire animal themed enemies.
Spider-Verse still has the best iteration of Peter Parker.
Oh,
it's just quality. Happened for years.
Peter B. Parker.
Years and years and years. Been there for decades. It's a long time. So that's just small. Other thing before we kind of ramp this up, Genshin Impact. Have you heard of it? It's literally Breath of the Wild. Gotcha.
I downloaded it.
Yeah, I heard it was actually I heard it from a lot of people. This is probably the best looking gacha game that's on the market right now. And story-wise and gameplay-wise, people are raving about this. And I've actually never seen such a push for a gacha game before, other than this game. So it's kind of crazy. For those who don't know, Genshin Impact is literally a game that kind of takes place in the world of Breath of the
Anime
Wild.
Anime of the Wild.
They take the same stamina systems, they take the same art styles and environmental factors into
it. They anime it up.
Yeah, they anime the hell out of it, and they put a gacha game on top of that, so now you just gotta be able to get rare characters and then go to dungeons to fight with them and level them up and get weapons and all that other good stuff.
All that stuff you kids love.
It's apparently it is a good-looking game, I have to say, but even down to making food,
it's Breath of the Wild.
It's the exact same thing. And people love it, though. It looks beautiful, I have to say. It actually pushes the boundaries a bit in where Breath of the Wild didn't, in that they just have a lot more models, they have a lot more gameplay mechanics in there that just look pretty cool.
And my understanding is it's a gacha game. My understanding is gacha stuff is not so overly gross that it makes it an unplayable mess or anything like that, which, like, hey, if people are enjoying it, this thing's free. You can get it on PC, you can download it on your PS4. That's pretty
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's, you can have it on your mobile device.
Yeah.
And it's just cross all over the place, including your PS4 or, wait, did you say PS4? Yeah. Can you have it on your
PS4?
I have
it on my PS4. I downloaded it.
Another reason why this game just completely blindsided me. You could just have it anywhere. And yeah, it just looks and plays pretty well. I am not trying to resist it. It's just, I'm not really a fan of gacha games. And
you don't like
I know fans? That initially... I felt like just playing Breath of the Wild, honestly. Like, I just felt like going back to that game rather than playing this game. Because, to me, it's just downright gambling, and whoever has the biggest pockets is going to win one day. If they ever introduce, like, PvP, the game's over. Yeah, it's like, it was just like with any other gachas. I was playing, like, Arknights or, say, like, Fire Emblem. Whoever has more money is just going to win in the end. So, and what is it, like, a 0.6% chance to get the highest stuff? It's gambling.
Yeah, it's loot boxes. It's just things that are illegal.
But it does look good, and I have to say, everybody's talking about it. People are loving it, and the story's not bad. I actually looked it up. It's not terrible.
It seems like it's
so I do recommend people to at least look into it if you've never played a game like that. I mean, for a Chinese-made game, damn, it's looking nice.
I got one more thing I want to touch on real quick, because I think it's worth noting. Blizzard did that thing they said they weren't going to do.
What did they
delayed
do?
WoW.
Oh, delayed Shadowlands?
Yeah, and it these stories seem to hit at a weird time where I'm like, I'm thinking more and more about how I'm really interested in the coming years to see what that new publisher Dreamhaven does, because that seems like it's the new Blizzard.
Yeah, I'm actually really curious to see what happens there.
Most of the old talent from Blizzard seems to have gone there.
You want to know what this reminds me of too? Respawn's Formation at the time,
yeah,
when they left,
similar ideas,
or Bungie didn't really depart, they kind of broke off.
Yeah, I mean,
But they didn't really go form something else.
They're free of Activision's grasp, and just from reading some stuff, people talking about, like, Blizzard back in the day, and a lot of people who went to Dreamhaven, saying, like, when the acquisition first happened for a long time, they were really precious with the Blizzard name, and, like, what they were willing to put the Activision logo on and things like that. Yeah. And as that faded, things got worse and worse. And Blizzard's last hurrah for me is when we see how Diablo 4 goes.
Truly. Truly. I'll agree with that. I was going to say, Blizzard, they kind of lost me when... Not the Hong Kong Pro... that only added fuel. They officially lost me when Warcraft 3 Reforged was shit.
Oh, yeah, when it was lacking all of the things.
Like, when we're talking about their actual product offerings here, they just lost me entirely with that, because they took it to a whole new level on the publisher side, where they just took ownership of people's mods. Like, that's...
It's fucked up.
That was so shitty. I was looking forward to that game for so long, and I was just like,
I ended up not...
You kind of tainted something that I used to really enjoy.
I ended
as a
up
kid.
Not picking it up at all when
I didn't even bother. I didn't even bother, and I encouraged everybody who was even talking about it not to do the same, because it was just shitty. And also, just in general, after all that with the Hong Kong protest too, again, that only added more fuel. Where I was just thinking, fuck that. I literally uninstalled Battle.net and haven't gone back since. I just didn't give a shit anymore. I was like,
yep.
Because they had Overwatch, and Overwatch is still good. It's so ironic that I'm even saying it like that, because 6 years ago I would have said, like, I gotta play Overwatch, because that game was the hottest thing at the time, and it's still a good game, and I'll always support it. It's just like, Blizzard's just attached to it now, but now that we have a new studio that's kind of breaking off, I truly do hope this turns out to be another Respawn Cinderella story, because Respawn, ever since they broke, they've had hit after hit after
hit. Here's also the thing to note,
they can't stop.
Dreamhaven is bigger, like, more ambitious than that. Because they're calling themselves a publisher. They have three internal studios.
I can't wait. It's just, they're going to end up creating some bangers, and it's going to be free creative control, and it's going to everybody... Yeah, I always love when these things happen, because everybody wins at the end of the
and
day.
I don't know
everybody
the specifics
wins.
Of, like, I know it's a lot of old Blizzard talent. I know one of the studios of the three is led up by the creative director for StarCraft II.
Yep. Yep. I know they have a lot of good people. I know they even took some people from Wizards of the Coast, even. Which is interesting to me. So they clearly have the full Rolodex of well-known people just joining the ranks. And I think that, honestly, it's just going to be great. I'm hoping it's going to be great. But goddamn, can't wait. And I really hope that... It's such a shame when you're looking at other companies or studios that used to be held in, like, immortal status regard, and now they're just crap. Like, I can't think of Blizzard in a good light most of these days. I don't care. Like, Blizzard back in the day used to be the gold standard
Blizzard
for me.
Is not
it's like, what a fall from
the
grace.
Blizzard they used to be. They are an arm of Activision.
Not at all. I mean, I hate saying it like this, too, because it makes it sound like they're not doing that great, but I know they are. They just switched their priorities. Valve, too, has also just changed in my eyes when I view them as a company, just because, not in a bad way, it's just they've actually just changed their priorities over time. Like, Valve very much so became more of a technology-focused company.
Yeah.
That also makes games on the side instead of being a game company that makes that dabbles in the tech space sometimes.
They just put out that Left 4 Dead 2 expansion for you.
They did. That was the mod team. Yeah, that was the mod team. And I played... That's what I wanted to talk about, too. I played it last week. Yeah. I played Left 4 Dead 2. You want to know the last time Steam told me I played Left 4 Dead 2? Back when it first released, like, over almost a decade ago.
Let's touch on that before we get out of here.
It was a lot of fun, and I have to say, the game still holds up. The Last Stand is just another campaign.
Yeah.
Another campaign, maybe a weapon or two, who cares? It's just, playing that game again, I was just always thinking, Valve is sitting on so many good properties that they just, I don't know what they're doing with them, because they could have, in this span, made another Left 4 Dead.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, this is a great, it's a great fucking game. It is. It didn't get old. We were playing Versus Mode 2 at the time, and it was just a blast. It was a blast to play, and it kind of took me back to where Valve's games at the time were just really well made. The only thing that was always so comical is that you can still not alt tab out of a Valve game without things always just breaking shit. Like, you can't do it.
They're not made for you to do other things.
They're never made for you. But it also just made me want another Left 4 Dead, and also it even made me go back to thinking about Team Fortress again, where I'm like, give me another. Just give me more of these titles. They had great capabilities with Alex, but I don't know what's going on there anymore. They got Dota. They got all their cash cows. I just want more of these titles, though. And this new expansion to the Left 4 Dead, or this new little update for it, it honestly rekindled my love of the game itself, and I hope that they just make more.
Are they making that Left 4 Dead game that's the aliens Back 4 Blood?
I don't know. See, even if they were, I have heard nothing about it. You don't hear anything.
Like, I remember, I know somebody brought it up recently, it's Left 4 Dead, but it's aliens dead.
Yeah. And I actually admired, back in the day, too, because you forget, even though everybody's made so many memes about this over the past decade or two, the cast of the Left 4 Dead games are so wacky. They're just a wacky cast. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, like, especially when two... Like, sure, one, you had Bill and the other... You had the biker dude, the woman, Lewis, and Bill. And in two, you had Ellis, who's, like, kind of the backroads kind of guy. You have Nick, who's the monster-looking Italian man.
Like, hey, listen.
And you got Coach, and then you got Rochelle. And I just thought, what a great diverse cast we got here. Like, it's just fun. They just completely displaced people that are just all in this game. And I was just even just thinking, you know, games where they feature the undead, they don't do that enough. They don't have more of that diverse type of cast where I'm just like, this is kind
Turtle
of ridiculous.
Rock is still making Back 4 Blood.
Incredible. I hope they come out with it.
It seems like they've been talking about it for longer, but they only announced it in 2019.
I hope they come out with it, truly. It's just, I want more Valve. Just, like, give me more shit. God damn it. But that's it for me. I just want to talk about Left 4 Dead. It's still good. Go play it if you want. I think it's a great one.
That being said, we had lots of game talk today. Light on news as the console generation winds down. I imagine it will be for a while. But
we are a month away.
We are.
Next week, we'll be a month away.
But that's wild. Now, let's sweep up and get the fuck out of here. Thank you to Ed Biquette for our wonderful intro, and thank you to Heather Ramos for our wonderful artwork. You can find us on the Twitters. I am at TheRichMeister0. You are at Beautiful_Eric. And you can send us questions, GeckoGamesPodcast@gmail.com. But until then, it's been our pleasure. Let's get the fuck out of here.
Let's get out of here. Bye, everybody.